Hello and welcome everybody to the Trauma and Mind Body Super Conference. I'm very excited with our guest today, which is John Amaral. And John is an energy practitioner, he's an author, he's an educator and founder of the Energy Flow Formula. He has a somatic energy healing practice and runs the body-centered leadership programs, originally a chiropractor, and he's been working for 25 years, thousands of people he's worked with, got quite a few A-list celebrities he works with as well, thought leaders and influencers. So, John, thank you so much for being part of the summit.
Nikki, it's great to be part of it. It's great to see you again after many years.
Yes, it's been quite a while. And I've been somebody who's had the benefit of receiving therapy from you, and it was very transformational. And that's why I had you on the summit. I know how powerful your work can be. Now, we're going to get into sort of talking about trauma as an energy blockage in the body. But before we sort of get into that, do you want to share a little bit about your journey into how you got into being an energy practitioner, kind of moving from being a chiropractor as well, and perhaps even your own health issues as well?
Well, it's an interesting sort of way that I came into any kind of healing practice at all, because I grew up without having ever been to a practitioner of any kind, any kind of like alternative or holistic or anything. I had very severe allergies and eczema all over my body. I had I was injected with medications for about 7 or 8 years, from the time I was about 7 or 8 years old till my teens, because I was reacting to the environment. I had all these symptoms. Hives all over my body, all the time. I would have reactions to the environment, so they didn't really know what to do with me, and I had a pretty traditional medical treatment regimen with cortisone injections, cortisone creams, steroids, etc. And I ended up going to chiropractic college, never having been to a chiropractor, never had a massage in my life. Never had any kind of acupuncture or any kind of alternative treatment. So I was a fine art major. I was studying the human body to draw and paint. I took a pre-med anatomy course, and the rest is history. I decided to go into the health field because the man who was teaching the lab was a retired chiropractor, and he said, John, I think you have a real gift for this. What have you ever thought about doing something in health? So I went from this, very disconnected from my inner world, emotionally disconnected, and really living in a very kind of mechanical, mechanistic, kind of biomedical paradigm, to really shifting gears. But it wasn't because I had this like profound experience. It was because these things just sort of happened, and it drew, and I just made these choices, and it was synchronicity. Really, it was divine timing, and I was guided somehow. And then through that process, I met my wife, who, her father was a medical doctor, mother was a nurse, and she had psoriasis, and she had all these conditions that weren't clearing up with medical treatment, and someone referred her to a chiropractor. This was on Long Island in New York. I grew up in California, she grew up on Long Island. And she had this experience where she actually was referred to the practice of Donnie Epstein, who was a man who developed network chiropractic, then network spinal analysis, and someone that both of us ended up, studying with and teaching for a long time. But she had this experience when she went and saw this practitioner that she felt like she could breathe for the first time. It was like the stress and trauma in her body just melted away, and she felt peace for the first time in her life. And she was like, whatever this is, I have to do this, because at that time she was in college going basically she was going to do environmental law. She was at Syracuse University. She totally switched her major, switched everything, and moved out to California. And I met her in prerequisites for chiropractic college, and I'd never been to a chiropractor. She introduced me to this work, and then it changed my life. Basically, I started feeling, experiencing the inner world. I started to feel energy moving in my body. I started to begin to develop self-awareness and body awareness, and all the symptoms started clearing, all the eczema, all the asthma, all the conditions that I was experiencing were gone. Literally, they started just like going away. But it wasn't that it was just a cure. I had a huge part in that through self-awareness. We can talk about this today, like how my, experience of trauma that I didn't even realize I had came onto the radar, and then I started to be able to heal. But awareness is the first step, and that's my introduction to all of this, is what brought me into a spiritual journey, really a journey of inner transformation, and that's where it starts. But it has to start with awareness. So that was the way I got into this. It was not like I had some incredible experience with this practitioner or something, and then I went. My wife is the one that had it, and she introduced me to it.
So very interesting. And just to be clear, you were talking about this network spinal analysis. That was the transformation, which is not the same as chiropractic, right? Do you want to just expand?
Well, yeah. Okay. I can explain. So network chiropractic was originally what Epstein coined, as the name for this method that he was developing, where he was kind of weaving together all these different approaches within the chiropractic profession from some of the great chiropractors in history, BJ and D.D. Palmer, who were the founders of chiropractic, D.D. the founder and his son, BJ, and then some other really kind of epic chiropractors who were doing upper cervical work, and Logan Basic was another chiropractic technique. So there were different approaches within the chiropractic world. Many different methods exist within chiropractic, and he had sort of picked the ones that worked the best at certain times and sort of orchestrated them into a system, and that was where network spinal analysis sort of evolved out of, and then it evolved again and evolved again, and that's one of the things that Epstein's always done. He's always very much innovated and evolved the work. So we studied, my wife and I, with him and worked with him, and ended up teaching for him for decade. Really, we were with, doing that work for a couple decades. Just over 4 years ago, I've really gone my own direction and been developing my own, kind of methods. But network spinal analysis is still a modality within the chiropractic application. It's still within the chiropractic world. And Epstein has gone on to develop his own energetic methods and approaches that are really not within chiropractic anymore. And I've done the same, where I'm still a licensed chiropractor, but the work that I'm doing, I'm not adjusting vertebral subluxations I'm not doing any kind of adjustments anymore. I'm working in really the field around the body and within the body. And we could talk about that, but yeah, that's the evolution of where that work came out of. And then my work, and I'd studied with many different people, along the way, and we've been to India multiple times, so learning Vedic and yoga, approaches, and been to South America and been to Asia, and there's so many different modalities that exist on the spectrum of, obviously this energetic approaches that are more subtle, and I've gravitated more toward the subtle approaches that are working with the subtle body, working with the subtle energy system, and are less mechanistic or mechanical, and so that's drawn me further and further off of the, in some cases, off the physical body, because the subtle, organizing fields around the body, as you're very well familiar with, are shaping and organizing how the physical structure really plays out. So, and this has to do with our consciousness, how energy moves in our bodies, what we perceive as or experience as trauma, how things are held in the field, how things are held in the physical tissues of the body, and we can dive in. But the way that I got here is through my own journey, from being a fine art student to going to chiropractic college, to being introduced to Epstein's work, to then becoming adept at that, and then evolving my own methodologies as I've progressed.
Super. That's really interesting. Okay. And very, it's interesting just mentioning with Epstein, he sort of had some big fans. I mean, we've got Ken Wilber on the summit, and Ken was definitely into Epstein's work, wasn't he? He's got some other big names, and Tony Robbins, of course, that you've worked with for years as well. It works, basically. That's the message, isn't it? It's very powerful. So yeah, let's talk about this concept of a trauma as an energy blockage. Expand on that. And I want to talk more about how you work with clients, so what you actually do as well. But let's just, if you want to expand on
Okay.
that more, because we've got people, we've got people talking about trauma in the in the nervous system, like Dr. Peter Levine talks about it in that context, and Stephen Porges, it's
Yes.
all in the nervous system.
Yes.
What would you say?
Well, I know. I think this is a yes and, right? So this is yes, the physical system is going to react to experiences or events that are perceived as or are actual trauma. So, I mean, it's the same. The fight or flight, system of the body, 1,200 plus, biological changes instantly happening when the body goes into fight or flight. One of the things that happens in the structurally is that the spinal cord is elongated inside the spinal canal, and the meningeal sheath, the covering of the brain and the nervous system, is stretched. It's attached into the cranium, it's attached into the first five or six, maybe seven vertebrae in your neck and into the tailbone. And what happens is, as the cord is stretched and elongated as part of the fight or flight reaction, it can stretch over 2 inches inside an adult spine. That all the nerve tissues that are exiting the vertebra are pulled on, and they are actually, there's a change in what's called tensegrity, which is the overall relationship, the tension relationships in all the fascia and the meningeal sheath. This is all contiguous. So the meningeal sheath is tied into, into the fascial system, which is tied into the pericardium around the heart, which is tied into the viscera around the organs, which is tied into the tendons and the muscle system. That fascial network is considered a liquid crystal. It has, like James Oshman, who I believe is on here. I've studied his work. This looking and Mei-Hwan Ho, a PhD researcher who passed away not too long ago. But this is the work of the quantum coherent system that's operating as a liquid crystalline matrix, basically. So we're the physical system is actually. Is going to hold energy and build up tension. And like I said, the spinal cord is stretched or elongated when the body's in fight goes into fight or flight. And this goes back to the work of a neurosurgeon named Alf Brigg, who had done a lot of research on elongation tension patterns of the spinal cord. Not, because we tend to look at, like, as chiropractors and as body workers, like compressive forces that happen in the discs, like a disc can be compressed or you can have a nerve impingement. But there's actually a much greater global effect when negative global effect when you stretch or elongate the tissues of the spinal cord. You can change the sensory motor and the trophic or the regrowth functions of the cells by 50 or 60% by just a not that much stretching or tension on those tissues. So, what Epstein was able to identify was that there are different distortions in the lengthening or stretching of the spinal cord that changes the tone of the tissues. Chiropractic was based on tone. If you go back to the early days of D.D. Palmer and B.J., these are the founders of chiropractic. They talked about changes in the tone of the system, the vibratory frequency of the tissues of the body. So, Epstein developed what he called the phasing system. So there are different frequencies of oscillation or vibration of these tissues when you distort or stress the spinal cord and the nerve system in different ways, and that has tied into a different consciousness. It's tied into a different experience of life, and your sensory system, as you're perceiving the world around you, is filtering everything through the state of your nervous system, really, and what is that tonal state? This goes into polyvagal, what's the tone of that system? The vagus nerve having 80 to 90% of the fibers are afferent. They're going from the heart to the brain. So all this information and feedback is coming through this sensory system from the environment around us, and then it's going out before we even have a chance to make up a meaning about it, before we have a chance to make a conscious decision. We've already processed through this physical, oscillatory, state in our body. Now, so that's the physical part of it. That's part of the physical part. But then when you start looking more at the organizing fields around the body, you start to recognize that before any information even comes to the physical body, it's actually passing through this field, which you can measure around the body electromagnetically, 3 to 4 feet with sensitive magnetometers. The squid, magnetometer is one of the ways. But apparently there are other some people I know in Oshman's book he talks about it being about 15 feet from the body that you can measure this. So I haven't seen the research on what instrumentation is being used, but we can perceive, experience, and sense things happening non-locally and things around us that haven't even touched us physically. And you know, that goes to Rupert Sheldrake's work on morphic fields and morphic resonance, right? The sense of being stared at, how dogs know when their owners are coming home. These are, you know, there's research to support that, hey, we're affected by non-locality, we're affected by fields. And so it's really important for me to integrate into the model and the way that I'm working that we start with the field because the field is organizing the physical matter. Let's look at how does trauma maybe affect the field? How does a stress that we're experiencing, whether it's a abuse that somebody went through, whether it is an auto accident that somebody was in, whether it was anxious, you know, a pattern that someone keeps repeating in their mind just about like what's going to happen, how's this all going to work, uncertainty. How does this, you know, how does this show up in the field? Is it blocked energy? Is it some kind of distortion in our, you know, in our the way our system is perceiving the environment? Is the environment out there really even the environment out there, or is it something that we're more in a constant kind of interaction and co-creation with? Is the universe within us, or are we in a universe that we're separate from? Like, how this gets into some very kind of foundational questions about reality, and that's what's always interested me. And so I'm giving more of a kind of a larger conceptual kind of here's the model, but I want to open for you to ask me a more maybe some more specific questions. I want to target it to make it relevant and useful for the people listening. So
Well, what you've said already is is great, and it's crucial because it's what I've just taken from what you said as well. You reminded me that we have this field, and the field perceives what's going on around us before we process it mentally, which is another reason why we don't. A lot of people are kind of saying on the summit, well, talk therapy doesn't really work for trauma. And it kind of, I don't want to do down talk therapy too much, it's got a role, but it just shows you how important it is to start at the sort of bottom, almost bottom-up approaches. That's what we're kind of talking about here, what we call a bottom-up approach, rather than just, you know, you can't talk yourself out of a distortion in the energy field. You have to address the distortion in the energy field, right?
Right.
I said
And I
distortion
think.
in the energy field. I think that's probably what trauma is. The various research I've done, that's what I've found. I think it's a distortion in this field, which then affects the rest of the body and impacts it in all kinds of ways. Is that your clinical experience as
Well,
well?
I would say technically it's more of a it is distortion, but it's dissonance. You know, it's where so for example, if somebody is in a distressed state, if somebody is in a state of reaction, fight or flight, in fear, in overwhelm, in anxiety, etc., then you are going to have a shift in your basically coherence in the system. And this is, you know, this is the work that HeartMath Institute has done for years, looking at coherence and whether or not you are able to stay in a, you know, sustain a state of coherence, brain, respiratory rhythms, heart rate variability, etc. So, if you are in a state of dissonance where the body's in this kind of reactive place, whatever thoughts come into your consciousness, whatever plans you make, whatever decisions you make about your health and your path, they are distorted already because you are not having thoughts that then it's not a mind over matter in the way that we just have thoughts and that changes our body. It doesn't work. So, you know, it doesn't quite work like that. We can only have thoughts that can arise from a certain state of coherence or lack of coherence. So the energy system sets the, in a way, context for what content can actually come into our mind even. So, you know, because the field organizes the physical matter and consciousness is the ground of being beyond time, space, dimensions, consciousness is the ground of all being. what arises from consciousness, which is everything, all of reality, which is pure love, bliss, grace, really perfection. Everything is interconnected in the perfect way. That ground of being is what we remember when we have awakened experiences, when we reconnect to this field that is loving, beautiful, that is really everything. It's the loss of connection to that, which is when we experience trauma, when we experience stress, when we experience lack of coherence in the system, we're losing our connection to something that is always there. And so anything that would come out of that distorted state is going to be kind of a hallucination or an illusion of the truth. And so if we start making decisions and choices based on that, we start building models or conceptual models of the world instead of just being in this world, this totally, for me, I've had these, you know, multiple experiences of awakening and mystical experiences, all kinds of, you know, really amazing things have happened in my own journey here. And so I know the ground of being pure love, pure grace, and I know that anything that is not that is a distortion of that. So really, in some ways, anything that is not that, where we do not feel somehow filled with like a sense of joy and grace and bliss, and like everything is actually perfectly organized, that means we are in reaction to something. We are in a way trauma. So we're all kind of, as human beings, in some way, shape, or form, we're experiencing some kind of trauma from just dropping out of that state of perfection. But it's always available. And so then how do we get, in a way, how do we remember it, and how do we clear the system to spend more time in the remembering that, hey, everything is actually perfectly organized.
I love that. You spoke with such clarity. I was like, you had to have had personal experience with that, because you're speaking with such clarity. That's awesome. So, I mean, this is the key thing. When you work on people, I want to know exactly what you do to help, you know, create a coherent field. And when you're working, do you also get the benefit? So I'm just wondering if you, as being doing this every day as a practitioner, is that feeding your energy field at the same time? Because there's some therapies that will work that way. But that was just a little side question because I'm interested. But then let's get into like how you actually clear somebody's field.
Yeah. So I do get energized. The only time that I, you know, over the years that I would get drained was when I would somehow get attached in a way to. Okay, so let me explain it this way. What I found is that the way to have really extraordinary results happen is total certainty about the outcome, knowing that when you show up, this something is going to happen, and having a clear sense and knowing of what you're going for, what will it look like, feel like, will the experience be of someone in coherence, when the body is in sync, when things are flowing, how will that look, how will that person experience, what will happen in their life. So knowing that already means that's a fully formed outcome. So we know we're going to get there. So I show up, I know that's going to happen. And then I have to have complete unattachment to how that happens exactly, when that happens exactly, and me doing it. So, because I'm just facilitating. So if I'm fully, fully in certainty about the outcome, and I'm completely unattached from my part in it, then it's incredible, you know, things happen. And it's really just the person's, you know, they're sorting it out. I'm helping to show them in a way new pathways to sort out how they can find more coherence and find more flow. So I get actually energized in most cases, because I'm actually focused on and watching for and getting excited about that opening. So as the person takes a breath, as the person moves in a new way, as I see and experience the tension drop, as they make that sound and they express that energy that's moving out of the body that was held in some tissues from some traumatic experience, and they never made the sound, they never experienced fully. Maybe they felt the experience as it was happening, but then their brain, and this is actually, well, let me just go on a little on a tangent here for a second, but I think it's really relevant to the conversation about trauma, is that when our body goes into a fight, flight, reactive, traumatic, you know, experience. What we're doing is we're taking the experience and fragmenting that energy and information and redirecting it to a part or parts of the body to protect in a way from having to be overwhelmed by that experience. So, so emotions that are being experienced that we don't have the capacity at the time to either register or it's not safe to express, the sounds we would make and the motions that would happen as emotion comes out, because emotion is needs sound and emotion to truly express. Otherwise, it's not emotion, it's just a strong feeling. That energy gets redirected as a standing wave. So you have energy that's actually vibrating or resonating in certain regions of the body that gets like encapsulated. And there's this where people feel like, in a way, sometimes their body, parts of their body feel foreign. This is like dissociation in its highest kind of degree, but it's the experience of this part of my body no longer feels like me. Somehow it feels separate or foreign. And in that experience, we're protecting ourselves from that information because the higher brain can't deal, it can't make that association, because that would have to mean we would experience or re-experience something that doesn't feel safe. So we want to make sure that for me and working with people, I want to make sure that I'm showing people a new, in a way, pathway, a new way to connect to the energy that was bound up and held in different parts of the body because it wasn't safe to be felt, but that we do it through a pathway of first finding where is there flow. So energy flow precedes, in a way, it precedes tapping into the bound up areas, because it's kind of like if you go upstream in a river and there's a beaver dam. I love beavers, but like, let's say you were like, these beavers are clogging up this river, and you want to like wash away all the debris. You would go upstream, and if you open the floodgates, you know, upstream, or you increase that flow, it will wash in a way through and wash away or kind of integrate all that debris and take it down and out. And so, in a way, if we create an increased coherence and an increased energy flow, then it's easier for the system to assimilate and move energy that was bound, because you have a sense of what's working and where there's ease. And this is where, you know, Epstein's work was very influential, because he actually identified that instead of trying to adjust the vertebra and move the structures of the body, you would go to the place where there was the most rapport or receptivity, and you would input force there. And that would allow the brain and nervous system to go, here's where the freedom is. And that would start to grow. And that he called spinal entrainment.
Wow. That's so amazing. Okay, that's the first time I've really understood what exactly you were doing. Brilliant analogy. Okay, that's totally makes sense to me.
So you're putting force into a region that's very receptive to that input, and the more directly vectored you can get to where you're giving the brain and body more specific information, the less force you need to use, and the more response there is, because it's like a nuclear fission or something, that the more that when you split the atom, you release a tremendous amount of energy, but you have to get to that very, very like tiny specific area. So in the body, it's like it's a nonlinear system, and if you input just at the right place at the right time with the right amount of force, you create an increased self-awareness and an increased self-regulatory ability to assess, like, is the way I'm holding my body and is this pattern of adaptation that I've created around some traumatic experience, is it still relevant? Is it efficient to be holding my body with all this tension and holding my shoulders up like this and holding my head forward? I can now, in a way, either consciously or unconsciously somatically be asking that because there's a reference now for something different. And the reference is created by showing the nervous system, body, and brain where is the most space, freedom, and flow. Let's use that as a reference. Now you're more awake and aware that, hey, there's freedom here. I can breathe, and breath brings increased awareness. You start oxygenating the system, bringing more energy and blood flow. The higher brain gets activated. This is part of the body coming out of fight or flight. The parasympathetic nervous system kicks in. So you're showing the nervous system and brain, hey, there are points where the spinal cord is attached and under tension. We can input a very subtle force in just the right area at the right time, which helps to suspend that fight or flight mechanism. The spinal cord starts releasing tension. The whole nervous system goes into parasympathetic, and the brain and body goes, oh, we can breathe. And now increased self-awareness is happening, and now you start feeling your body, and the information that was held or pushed down in different areas of the body is now made available, because the higher brain is now able to, the cortex and the prefrontal cortex is like lit up again, because that's what happens when you come out of fight or flight. The heart and brain are starting to actually communicate. You know, you have that whole, you know, cardiac nervous system. You have 40,000 plus neurons that are the same as in your brain, in your heart. You start, you know, re-establishing that flow and connection between brain and heart, and the whole system jumps into a higher level of coherence. And next thing you know, you can experience and remember sometimes. Oftentimes people actually have a visceral remembrance, but sometimes it's just the experience of like whatever that was that was that they were responding to or was still anchored in their body that they were reacting to is no longer even relevant. It's just like gone. Suddenly they are, it's like that happened, and you can, you know, there was an abuse, there was a rape, there was a traumatic accident, and you're like, I've done all this therapy, I've talked about it for years, but the visceral component of it is, it's like it releases, and suddenly there's no charge. The yes. energetic charge and the physical, physiological charge is no longer there. And so now you're no longer referencing that incident in that same way. So for all extents and purposes, you've rewritten that whole pattern. You've rewritten that whole event. And now when you reference back to
Oh, we just lost you briefly for a second. It's still recording. And I'll just...
Okay.
So that was brilliant. So you've rewritten the event, and when you reference back to it, so just start from what you say, when you reference back to it, it's not the same.
Okay. And so when you reference back to that, whatever that was that happened in your life, it no longer has a charge. But what's interesting is that research has shown that we really about half of what we remember never even happened. So when we remember an event or a circumstance that happened, let's say 20, 30 years ago, when we were in this accident or we were in this abusive situation or whatever it was, we remember certain things in certain ways because of heightened emotional intensity at the time, and our brain and nervous system locks that in. And then we oftentimes, though, we're making up a whole story about this. This is, some researchers were looking at this like post 9/11, during like interviewing people that were, saw the towers fall and saw, and they were, you know, there was traumatic memory and experience that was happening, and in a number of the cases, quite a few actually, they found that when they actually did all the really looked into where this person was when this happened, there's no possible way they could have actually seen this. So they had stitched together, like one person was in a room that was facing the opposite direction of the towers, and they vividly remembered looking out the windows from their room and seeing the towers, and they're it was facing the opposite direction, so there's no way that could have happened. So they had stitched together. It wasn't that they were just lying. They had stitched together images and experiences around that time and fabricated a memory that now served as an anchor to a traumatic experience that actually didn't happen in the way that they remembered it, but it still had the effect. So part of this, like when we release, when we're releasing bound energy in the body, when we're unhooking the fight or flight mechanism and we're letting the spinal cord release its tension, the body go parasympathetic, we're letting a coherence come back into the system, we're helping the brain and body start to coordinate, we're letting somatic information be revealed in a way to the brain now that it's safe to feel this because the body's not in this vigilant state. And what happens is you can remember the past in a different way, which is actually in a way it gives you the ability to receive the gift of that past now rather than just the wound of it and rather than just the trauma, because even the cells that were there, let's say 7, 8, 10 years ago, the majority of the cells of the body are completely replaced, most of them in a number of years, and by about 7 or 8 years almost all cells are replaced. The heart, actually, you have a let's say someone's 50 years old, you have about 50% of the original heart cells in your body still. So heart cells, like, it's a lot slower process. So I feel like the heart actually retains in a way direct information from our whole history and in a different way than some of the other tissues. Obviously, some of the neurons in our body, et cetera, take a lot longer to be replaced. But we fabricate a reality based on experiences that were distorted oftentimes from past things. And the healing that happens when people experience trauma, that trauma is very there's a very subjective aspect of it, because we can be hallucinated or making up whole and intensifying things that may have happened or maybe didn't even happen, but it doesn't matter in a way, because the whole system responds as if it is either sometimes still happening, or if it happened, or preparing for it to happen again. And this is the work where I'm working with people. I'm looking to, in a way, intersect with their consciousness, their energy, and their, the physical matter of their bodies, which is really only about 4.5% of the universe is the physical matter. So we want to, the subtle body, the subtle energy field is, and their consciousness is what's going to shift the physical material world the fastest.
Amazing. And just to confirm as well, this obviously, this the your mode that you're working in, it's not a re-traumatizing. This is just to mention as well, obviously, like people, there isn't the risk of re-traumatization as people release.
Yeah, you don't have to relive or re-experience the trauma as it happened. What happens is the energy that was held in the body around, like that dissonant, that adaptation, when the spinal cord is stretched and the respiratory system, like, you know, you contract, the heart maybe goes into a less coherent state. The tendons and muscles build up tension. The body is, you know, now in a protective kind of armory. When that starts releasing, energy is liberated. But if you feel safe and you feel held and you feel guided in that process, when you re-experience that energy, it doesn't mean you have to re-experience the exact trauma. You might have tears. You might have a sound of visceral experiences that were held in the tissues of the body that actually need to express through tone and sound. When you get into the visceral system, the fascia, and the kind of what I'd call the life force energy, that is pre-rational information. So that means your thinking mind, even your emotional system, doesn't register it. So sometimes when that comes on the radar, someone finds themselves, like, they're healing, the brain is starting to make these connections, and we're starting to bring into awareness information that was held in these tissues of the body that we couldn't get to with our thinking mind. That's where you might experience, you might find yourself sobbing, there might be a tone or a whine or a cry, a shriek that never came out that needed to happen, but you held it in. Maybe someone was going through sexual abuse and, like, they had to be quiet, or maybe somebody just in their family was just a very intense, like children are to be, you know, seen and not heard and shut up and hold it in, and everything was, like, held in. So sometimes, like, the real expressions that needed to come out, if you were really expressing your true emotions with the kind of passion and intensity that was actually true for you at the time, that's what can kind of come out. And people are sometimes surprised at, this is what happened in when I was working with one of the celebrity, a good friend of mine, Julianne Hough, in Davos at the World Economic Summit. I was doing a session with her, and I just, you know, went in the field around her body, and a shriek just came out of her, and she just moved into this position because her body was just expressing. I mean, I had worked with her a lot before, and she moves and expresses, but people at the World Economic Summit were not used to seeing this kind of thing. And so it went, like, viral around the world, and there was, like, you know, they were talking about Julianne Hough as an exorcism and all these things. So, because people didn't have a context for what was happening, but what was happening was a spontaneous expression of that energy, and it felt good. It wasn't like she was reliving something traumatic and having this experience of pain. It was like a release that actually felt, even if it was a painful sounding sound or a moan or a whine or a cry, there's a sense of resolution and relief that's happening, because you're finally completing an experience that never got to be fully expressed. And so people don't re-experience the trauma and just feel the trauma again. They re-experience it as it's, in a way, passing through. It's almost like when you bring up a file on your computer and it says, are you sure you want to delete this? And you're like, I'm sure, I'll send it to the trash. And it's like, it's going to show you for a moment, here's the thing, let me check. Okay, yes, and it's on its way out. So the system does that. It's like a retracing kind of experience. But it doesn't mean that you go back and regress back to that place, and then now you're in it and you're just suffering in it. You're actually now liberated as it's passing through.
Love it. Absolutely brilliant. It's been an absolutely awesome interview. I've been enthralled the whole time. You spoke so clearly about it all as well. I was going to ask, before we get into just like sharing your details, how people can maybe get to work with you somehow, or people that you've trained and so on. I think I love and resonate with your work so much because it's actually, you're triggering Kundalini releases. I mean, your Kundalini energy, right? I mean, we're talking about waking up and a spiritual awakening here, based on what you're saying. And I think ultimately that is what going to be one of the best ways to clear trauma, is like start a spiritual awakening process and get the Kundalini energy working. It's like the two things are actually the same, trauma healing and Kundalini and spiritual awakening. It's the same path, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happens is that there is an awakening to some deeper aspect of being, an awareness of your body and its sensations and feedback, an awareness of your, you know, as you heal, as you go deeper, as you expand further, there's an awareness that, you know, there's my experience in my body and for myself. Then there's my relationships to my world around me. You know, this is what is also known as like a holarchy, right? Like there's something called a holon, and it's like that in every single like part, no matter how minuscule, is the part of a greater whole. And you can't look at, if you can't separate something out and put it in a vacuum, because everything is interconnected. So every cell of my body is connected somehow to larger fields of energy and information and the culture. We see this, which is what's happening right now in the United States and around the world, is there's a shift happening because people are aware, and now they're less okay with allowing a certain like kind of dynamic that was going on for such a long time. The consciousness has shifted already, so now the structure changes. So what I see is, as we awaken, as we have increased awareness, first it's self-awareness, then it spreads out to an awareness of usually the relationships around us, and then it goes out to a more global, you know, we go from egocentric to more kind of world-centric, and then we go into more cosmocentric, ultimately, where we recognize that every single thing in the cosmos is interconnected, and that, you know, there's you know, a famous, in physics, it's called the Pauli exclusion principle, and it's like basically says that, you know, you can't impact one single molecule, you know, in the universe without it affecting somehow every other molecule. And it's like, again, like chaos theory talks about, you know, the butterfly flaps its wings in, you know, Japan, and it changes the weather in the Gulf of Mexico, right? That everything is interconnected and everything matters. And so every time we take a deeper breath, every time we come into more awareness in ourselves, every time we recognize a pattern that we, you know, we're reacting in some way, and now we actually see that we can respond in a different way, that it ripples out and it makes a change or a difference in the world around us. And I feel like the work that I'm doing is very much about that. I was a fan of Hawkins' works, The Power Versus Force, and, you know, back in the day when he wrote that every individual, their consciousness is on a certain, you know, scale, and the more we elevate our consciousness on that scale, the more impact we have, positive impact in the world around us. And so in a way, that's it is a spiritual journey. It is Kundalini energy. The chakras and the energy, you know, all these energy centers are getting activated. The nadis and the basically the subtle energy channels are getting activated. The energy meridians in the body are getting activated. There are so many different, you know, indigenous cultures, shamanic practices, ancient wisdom principles, yoga, the Taoist principles. All these things are, like, I've really dived into all of them because I've had interest in seeing, like, what were the sort of ancient technologies, and then how can science that were, you know, are more kind of modern, you know, scientific methodologies and quantum physics and stuff start to kind of lay a foundation from this perspective under that. And you do get to, as we, and I think as we get to the, as we, as this all converges, we get to where we are now, which is, you know, we are an expression of consciousness. We are We are consciousness. The universe is within us. You know, we are in a way co-creating reality. We are creating the future for what is possible for all humans. And so the more connected and conscious we are, the more trauma that we've, you know, like healed and integrated and recognized that we can grow and heal and actually contribute from it, and it's all perfectly organized somehow, the more everyone wins, and when everyone in the world is impacted in positive ways. So
agreed, couldn't agree more. And John, thank you so much for being on the summit. Like, this, the modality that you're using here and your tools and what you're doing, it's one of the most powerful that people should know about to help them heal trauma. So I'm so glad I had you on the summit. Thank you so much for taking
part. I'm so glad to be here, for sure.
Tell people, how can people, if they did want to work with you somehow, or how people can find out more about you and your work online?
So people can find me online at johnamaral.com. And also I have an Instagram account, which is at Dr. John Amaral. And in the link in the bio there, I have access to a 7-day challenge, a free challenge. So I take you through some exercises and processes, and that's a free process. People can experience like a virtual aspect of my work. There's also, they can also find that on my website, johnamaral.com. So they can find all the details about different events that I do when this COVID thing is like cleared and we can start, you know, doing events again. I do events in LA. I do some events around the world. And also, people can, inquire about doing private work with me, which I have a limited amount of like private sessions that I do, and people can inquire there on the website.
Awesome. That was brilliant. Thank you so much, John. That was absolutely amazing. So thanks. Yep. And take care, everyone, for now, and see you in the next episode.